This is LBC, leading Britain's conversation. Mystery Hour with James O'Brien. Call 0345 6060 973. Tweet at LBC. Text 84850. Mystery Hour with James O'Brien on LBC.
4 minutes after 12 is the time, and you are listening to LBC. You don't get many guarantees that are cast iron anymore in the modern world, but there is a cast iron guarantee made to you at 12 noon every Thursday on this radio station. And that guarantee is this. By 1 o'clock today, you will know more than you do now. Promise. Absolutely promise. You will know more than you do now. Whether you have any use whatsoever for the new knowledge that you glean, I cannot guarantee. Whether you find it remotely useful in any area of your existence henceforth, I do not know. But you will at least have more knowledge in your noggin than you do at this stage in time. That is the Cast Iron Mystery Hour Guarantee. What is he talking about, you might be thinking, if you're new to this? Let me tell you what Mystery Hour is all about. You probably have, somewhere lurking in the depths of your consciousness, a question to which you know there must be an answer, but you've never actually been able to find it out for yourself. It may just have popped into your head this morning, or it may be something that you suddenly remember in the course of the next 40 minutes or so, when you go, yes, I do. It could be something the kids asked you. A who, a why, a where, a what, a when, a whether, a whither, a wherefore, who knows? Any interrogative pronoun you please. The point is this, it will probably have an answer, and someone else listening will know it. So you ring 0345 6060973. You ask your question, and you sit back and wait for someone else to ring 0345 6060973 with the answer. And that is pretty much it. There are a couple of rules I should specify. If you're familiar, if you're an old hand at this, ring in now and book your place on the usual number. But if you're not, just bear with me. Don't be boring. By which I mean a dull question to which only you will be interested in the answer. So it's quite hard to specify that, isn't it? Because we had a brilliant question the other week from a lady who wanted to know why she floated in the swimming pool. But usually, if it's only you that's going to be interested in the answer, something to do with motoring or something, it's probably dull. Either way, if you get the impression from Michael or Rhianne answering the phones that your question is not being greeted with great enthusiasm, please take the hint and jog on. The other thing we can't indulge is repetition. We can't have questions that have been dealt with recently, which means, really, if Jones the engineer and I can remember it, you probably won't get on either. Check the Mystery Hour archive if you want to get a little bit of guidance on whether your question has been dealt with before. That's at lbc.co.uk. Otherwise, pretty much anything goes. It can be, oh, by the way, Professor Hal is in Siberia. One of the regular Mystery Hour fixtures has already sent me a letter from his mum to reveal that he's in Siberia at the moment and will not be able to enjoy Mystery Hour, which leaves the field clear for our other resident professor, Professor Martin, to fill his boots with applause. If you answer a question correctly, you receive the gold-plated now Mystery Hour round of applause. And that, I think, pretty much sets it up. I also need to thank I think his name is Mark, a driving examiner operating in the Kent area, who had the particular privilege last weekend of presiding over the producer's successful driving test, during which he revealed his love of Mystery Hour. So, Mark, I hope that there was no corruption involved, but I would like to offer you, for looking after Michael so well and for helping him pass his driving test, here is, for you, Mark, the driving examiner, a Mystery Hour round of applause. Mark's in Weybridge. Mark, what would you like to say?
Hello, James. Hello. How are you?
Very well indeed.
Good. I want to know, and I'm asking this question for my cousin, actually, who's actually driving one of those car transporter trucks all around the M25 now on his way back to Tilbury.
Okay.
So in the aims of safety, I said I'd ask the question for him.
What's his name?
His name's Anthony.
Hi, Anthony! Carry on, Mark.
Anyway, his question is, why do salt cellars, salt pots that you put the salt and pepper in, why do they have one hole and pepper has numerous holes in it, when traditionally pepper as a spice was more expensive, so you'd actually put more of the spice onto your food?
Was it more expensive, salt? I mean, salt.
Salt, yes.
We were paid in salt at one point. That's where the word salary comes from, isn't it? Roman soldiers were paid in salt. I don't know. But it's just the consistency of the powder, isn't it? Is that pepper is ground more finely?
If you put pepper into the salt pot, you can still get it out. So why is there...
But you don't want pepper in... I know.
Go on.
We used to put our salt in a little pile at the side of the plate, didn't we?
Yeah.
It's only a relatively recent development that we sprinkle it all over the plate rather than putting it in a little. When I was a kid,
yeah,
when
so
you,
why only one hole for the salt?
Because
cellar?
That helps you make a pile on the side of your plate as opposed to a general sprinkle.
Mm, you're not convincing me.
That's actually a brilliant answer.
No, have a round of applause.
It really is. But do you remember? How old are you?
Me, 54.
Right. So when you were younger, you used to have the salt on the side of your plate. Don't you remember? In a little pile.
Yes.
And that, you couldn't do that if you had six holes in the pepper pot in the salt cellar.
So
salt was so precious, you'd keep it in a small pile. Maybe you'd even put it back if you go back far enough. You'd put it back in the salt cellar after you'd finished with it. I don't know what else the answer could be. I hate it when this happens. I've worked it out. It's a brilliant answer, and you're just dripping with scepticism and incredulity. So you want me to leave it on the board, don't you?
Of course.
Right, fine.
And say a good good afternoon to my cousin Anthony.
I already did.
Oh, all right.
Yeah. Okay. Cheers. Is he always like that, Anthony? Martin's in Wood Green. Martin, question or answer?
Question.
Yes.
Well, first, when's your thing in New Cavendish? That's not the question, by the way.
You know, mate, with respect, there's sort of a few hundred thousand people listening to this. I like the idea that you think you can just call me up for a chat. But we should probably be getting on with the programme rather than just sort of catching up.
All right.
Last Sunday of the month at the Phoenix in Cavendish Square. Now, what did you ring up for?
What is the mechanism for the brain that deciphers between what goes into short-term memory and what goes into long-term memory?
So, when does a short-term memory become a long-term memory?
Yeah, like, because I'm doing the knowledge at the moment and everything seems to go into the short-term memory.
Oh, man, that made me laugh. Yes, I know. I think we've all had sort of days like that, haven't we? So you can remember it all.
Yeah, and everything the missus says seems to go in there as well.
Well, I don't know. I mean, in a way, what you're asking is what's the difference between a short-term memory and a long-term memory, apart from time?
Yeah, and whoever calls up with the answer, if you can just prod them for how do I make things go into the long term, because that might help me out a bit as well. If there's, I don't know, whether I've got to eat more cheese or something, I don't know.
Long-term, I like that, yes. I mean, long-term memory usually means things like childhood. I mean, in the context of a dementia diagnosis, you can't remember what you had for breakfast, but you can remember what your wife wore on your wedding day.
So don't prod lions with a stick, things like that.
Don't prod lines with a stick. That's always good advice that you keep in mind. I shall do what I can, Martin.
Thank you very much, James.
No, thank you very much.
See you on one of these Sundays, hopefully.
Last Sunday of the month. So he's referring to my comedy current affairs extravaganza, which does indeed. No pressure to be funny. Happens at the end of every month. I feel we're a national station now. It's a slightly odd thing to mention when it was all right when we were based in London exclusively. A couple of phone lines free. Very, very busy beginning, but I think quite a lot of repeat business. So we've very politely jettisoned that, and it means I can now tell you that if you dial 0345 6060973, you will get through. And that is the number you need if you can explain why salt and pepper shakers are differently holed, or the relationship, the difference, the distinction between short-term memory and long-term memory. Bobby's on the M4. Bobby, question or answer?
Question, please, James.
Yes, Bobby.
Why I was putting my twins to sleep, and they said, "Dad, why is a stepson or a stepdaughter called? What's the step got to do with the connection with stepdaughter, stepson,
or stepmother, and they said, or stepfather? What's a step? Why does step come into it?"
Yeah, and they said, "Google it." And I said, "No, we're not going to Google it. We're going to wait till Mystery Hour and ask James O'Brien."
You're my boy. You're my man, Bobby. That's what we need. Love it. Yeah, step. Why? Yeah, I've never thought about that before. Because in-law makes sense. Daughter-in-law, son-in-law makes sense. Literally. I mean, there was a legal claim. But step.
Yeah, I was trying to explain it to them, but they said, yeah, but why is it step? What's the step?
They're one step away? No, that doesn't work, does it? Step. Well, crikey, the pressure's on now, Bobby, because if we don't deliver on this, your children are going to be lost to Google forevermore. The joys of human interaction and enlightenment will pale in significance. And he mentions Google, actually, which I forgot to do. Obviously, some of the questions that we hear on Mystery Hour could probably be answered with access to the internet or a search engine. But do you know what we don't do anymore? Talking in the last hour, actually, about young people leaving school without various skills. What we don't do anymore is search for knowledge or celebrate it in a way that you did before it was always just a keyboard click away. Graham is in Bradford. Graham, question or answer?
Question, James.
Yes.
Why are people who treat feet called chiropodists and podiatrists? About 4 years ago, the department where I go for my feet changed overnight from the chiropody department to the podiatry department. You might know with your Latin and Greek, it's something to do with that probably, isn't it?
Chiropodist. I mean, well, it is definitely something to do with Latin and Greek. There's no prizes for saying that. Do they definitely, and they do exactly the same things, do
they? As far as I know, they do exactly the same things. A podiatrist and a chiropodist do the same thing.
It sounds like the world's worst joke, doesn't it? What's the difference between a podiatrist and a chiropodist?
It's a bit confusing, though, isn't it?
I
think one might be an Americanism, you know.
Oh.
I think they might favour podiatry in America, and they brought it over here.
I tell you what, we need a chiropodist to tell us, or a podiatrist to tell us, don't we?
Yeah, if you can, James. Yeah. I've been thinking about it for 4 years now.
Really? Well, flipping out, better late than never, Graham. Eh?
All right, James. Cheers.
Nice one. It's 12:15.
This is LBC.
It's 12:20. If you don't routinely have LBC on in the nighttime hours, you're really missing out. Clive Bullock's on before Duncan Bart's, and Duncan Bart's Cooking with Gas every night on LBC. So do treat yourself to that if you haven't already. Mystery hour is upon us. Why does salt and pepper come differently holed? One hole in the salt, multiple holes in the pepper. Short-term memory and long-term memory, what's the difference? What is the actual difference? And how can we get stuff from our short-term memory to our long-term memory? You had to probably hear Martin's call to understand why I'm chuckling. He's doing the knowledge at the moment, learning to be a London cab driver, and obviously he forgets it all. He wants to find out how he can get stuff from his short-term memory to his long-term memory. Why step in the context of families, stepdaughters, stepmothers? Where does the step come into it? And what's the difference between a podiatrist and a chiropodist or a chiropodist? There's some dispute on Twitter about whether the H is silent. 21 minutes after 12, Ian is in air. Question or answer, Ian?
Oh, it's an answer, James.
Good man.
First of all, I can tell you about podiatry because I'm going there at 2 o'clock.
Nope, that's not what you got what I rung in for. Stop bending the rules, Ian, and talk to me about salt and pepper.
Salt and pepper. The main reason why you've got a large hole for salt is that salt attracts water and clumps very easily. So if you put it into a pepper pot, it's very, very difficult to get the salt out. So having a bigger hole means that you can get the salt out very quickly.
But in a lot of continental European countries, Italy and Spain, people are telling me it's the other way around.
That's because it's drier down there. You're talking about humidity up in this part of the world.
Always good.
Where the salt attracts the water.
Oh, I cry, flip it, heck. You got that one straight back over the net, didn't you?
Oh, good.
I hadn't thought of that, actually. What about the little pile at the side of the plate theory? I quite liked that. You remember that, don't you?
Well, I just people being posh.
Was that a posh thing? See, it's my gilded youth, you see. It's my aristocratic background.
You see, where I grew up...
Sprinkle it everywhere.
It was always... They shoveled it on by hand, so you didn't get as much salt as you would put on by yourself.
I'm just going to... I think you're on course for applause. But I'm just going to let Frolly in Loughton, because I've never met anyone called Frolly before, so I just wanted to hear what she had to say. Frolly, what would you like to say?
Well, I'm afraid you've already heard what I want to say. It is true that in France, I can't speak for other continental countries, but in France, they do have it the other way around.
C'est vrai.
And to my cost, I've often showered my food with salt.
So it's tradition, but also I think Ian's probably onto something that because
Northern France too, and it's not very hot there.
No, so. I don't split hairs, Frolly.
I do.
Okay. I'll give you a round of applause.
Oh, thank you.
You're very welcome.
Thank you.
But that was more out of politeness,
Ian.
We'll take what we can get. Ian, this one's for you. This is bona fide.
Thank you.
All right, bona fide. Thank you very much, Ian. Frolly, cross that one off, salt and pepper. Short-term memory, long-term memory, what's the difference? Step-daughter, step-son, why step? And the difference between a podiatrist and a chiropodist or chiropodist. Paul's in Bromley. Paul, question or answer?
It's an answer, James.
Come on, then.
To the podiatry one.
Yes. What's the difference?
There is no difference. Basically, podiatry is an Americanism, and a few years ago they changed over to podiatry, so there's no confusion.
So Graham up in Bradford has... over the course of the last 4 years, unwittingly solved his own mystery.
I believe so, yes.
That is quite a thing he's done there, old Graham. That's remote. Well, hang on, what are your qualifications?
I used to cut old people's toenails, and on the training course, the podiatrist said basically it used to be called chiropodist, but now they're podiatrists, and there's no difference.
How old did one have to be to qualify to have one's toenails cut by you?
50, but I also did people with learning disabilities who were younger, so...
this was only part of a job, surely? You weren't a professional toenail cutter.
It was a part-time job. It was covering maternity leave.
Just doing the toenails?
Yeah.
Well, you live and learn, Paul. What are you doing now?
I'm back to being a house husband at the moment. So,
okay.
And listening to LBC.
There's nothing wrong with that. I had no idea that there was a job that only involved cutting toenails. I thought you didn't do a little bit of pumice stone work or a little bit of late filing?
You cut, file, and sometimes hard skin or cream.
But nothing above the ankle?
No, that's right. But like I say, I think it's basically because hospitals and places that no longer do it. And obviously older people, if they can't...
reach down.
Yeah. And so, well, that sounds not a great job. It was actually a very good job.
I'm just as surprised by the job. It's a service you're providing.
Oh, no, but most people, when they think, I think teeth or feet, they can't stand. But I'd say it's...
I'd be fine with feet. I struggle with teeth. I'm fine with other people's feet. What, of course, you didn't realise that this part-time job would provide you with is a mystery. Our round of applause.
Oh, fantastic. It's my second. I'll go try and catch up the bloke in Basildon.
Don't give Wayne in Basildon some sort of dubious celebrity status. Honestly, we'll never hear the last of it. It's 25 minutes after 12. A couple of phone lines free. Remember, I only say this gets very, very busy in Mystery Hour, but we are increasingly strict. So even if the phone lines were all full 30 seconds ago, it does not mean they will all be full now. And indeed, they're not. 0345 60 60 973. We've got room for more questions. And we still need some answers. Only two left, though. The short-term memory, the long-term memory, and the step-daughter, step-son question. Why step? But as I say, when you hear me say the number, it means this phone line's free. Where are we going next? Let's go to Katie, who's in Sunbury. Katie, question or answer?
It's an answer, James.
Marvellous.
The difference between short and long-term memory...
Bring it on.
There are two differences. The first is duration, so the amount of time a memory is stored in each one.
I kind of knew that.
Well, it's a very big difference. So, in short-term memory, the information lasts for about 18 seconds.
Right.
And in that time, you have to process it and either file it away or forget it. And obviously, long-term memory is indefinite, in inverted commas. And it's also to do with the capacity of information that you can store in each one. So, the magic number for short-term memory is 7 plus or minus 2 chunks of information. Whereas long-term memory is much more, obviously, remember.
So if I'm trying to remember a shopping list, that would be short-term memory.
It would do, but then what happens is that the information goes into short-term memory. You then process it and encode it, so it goes into various different stores within your long-term memory.
Right.
And how you get it from A to B, so from short-term to long-term, is to do with the depth at which the information is processed. And also things like rehearsals, so how often you repeat the information to yourself.
So I'm thinking of, it's National Poetry Day today, and I couldn't think of a way to mark it, so we didn't, but now we can. Because when I try to learn a poem, which I sometimes do when I've got insomnia, I try and commit a poem to memory. The short-term memory is translated or transformed into long-term memory by rehearsal, by saying it over and over again in my head, and when I forget, I get the book again and have another look.
Exactly, or it can be to do with things like meaning attached to the memory. So, for example, if you have something that's of particular importance to you, you're more likely to remember that because you've processed it at a much deeper level.
So when Martin's doing the knowledge, he's driving around town trying to commit routes and roads to memory, and he does, but only the short term. If he wants to commit them to the long term, he needs to spend more time at the end of the day going back over everything he's done.
Yeah, exactly.
There's no magic bullet or secret trick. He just needs to put in the hours. Unlucky,
yeah,
Martin.
Sorry.
Well, what are your qualifications, Katie?
I'm a psychology student. I'm doing a degree, and we did it last year for cognitive psychology.
Boom.
Yeah.
Beautifully done. No, thank you. Thank you. And I recommend that, by the way, on National Poetry Day as a way to, if you do ever suffer from sort of insomnia. I just mean the really boring insomnia, the one where you're just tired and you want to go to sleep, but for whatever reason you can't. Not when you're lying awake at night worrying about really important things or terrible things, just that weird one you get sometimes. Put a poem in and it will really, really help. So you start with a short one, like it's a Stevie Smith poem. Croft sits aloft in the loft, he is soft, poor Croft. It's a beautiful poem. You just say those over and over again in your head, eventually you'll drop off. Or there's a John Keats poem, To Sleep, which is the first one I learnt back at school. And you get that perfect cure for insomnia. It's actually about sleep. Once you've got it committed to your long-term memory, you can pull it out whenever you want and run through it whenever you want. And it's National Poetry Day. It's coming up to 12:30. You're listening to James O'Brien on LBC. Mystery Hour is underway, although we are knocking them off now. We've only got Stepdaughter left, which means there's room for a whole host of new questions. Let's squeeze one in, actually. Derek's in Raynham. Derek, what have you got?
Hi, James. Question, please.
Carry on.
James, if you're unfortunate enough to visit a funeral parlour, you normally visit and speak to the funeral director. But I just wondered, where does the name Undertaker come from? I've tried to break the word down, but I can't get the answer.
Well, crikey, I haven't even got time to speculate on it, which I imagine comes as an enormous relief to you, Derek. We'll crack on with that after this. It's 12:34. Mystery Hour is underway. If you've got a question that needs an answer, if you need satisfaction, you can achieve it here by dialing 0345 6060 973. Only two questions left on the board as half-time ticks past us. That includes stepdaughter or stepson and Undertaker. Why Undertaker for funeral directors? Rob's in St John's Wood. Rob, question or answer?
It's a question, please, James. I've always wondered why, I think it's Africa is known as a subcontinent. When you think of sub, you think of spare. But we've known it's there for thousands of years.
You think of spare. You think of spare because of substitute. What about submarine, which means under?
Yeah, well, that's... Again, but it wasn't really underwater, was it?
But no, a sub bit, not the marine bit, Rob.
Oh.
The sub bit means under, so I think... Because for me it was the Indian subcontinent rather than the African sub. Africa is a continent.
I wasn't too sure which one.
Africa is a continent, Asia is a continent, but the Indian subcontinent is part of the Asian continent. I think it's just a question of scale. If you have a landmass, a contained landmass that is big enough... And it's part of another continent, then it's a subcontinent. So they talk about the Indian subcontinent.
Right. Okay, cool. Thank you very much.
You're very welcome. Also, I haven't had any applause. I haven't had any yet today, Rob, so I'm very glad you came along when you did.
Oh, actually, while you're there, I am actually owed a round of applause.
Are you?
Yeah, because I don't know if you remember, it was the week you went away, I answered the last question. It was all about the fella that asked about if anyone survived during the trenches, during the First World War, because it was quite a harrowing answer.
And it came right at the end, and you had a family member, did you, who...
Yeah, I've actually... Is it okay to tell a quick story? Is that okay?
Yeah, of course it is. You know how this show
works. It's actually my great-granddad on my mum's side. He was part of the Irish regiment.
Okay.
And I think it was at the Battle of the Somme, and obviously they were meant to get through to three different lines of trenches, and obviously you know what happened there, but my... granddad's unit was the only unit that got through to the third trench.
Yes.
So after, like, the actual battle, they turned round to him and said, well, how come your lot got to the third trench when half of us didn't even get past their own? And he said, and he goes, oh, there's a reason for that. He goes, you told us to walk. He goes, we thought that was a bad idea, so we decided to run.
The question was, did anyone who started the First World War finish it?
Yeah.
Did anyone come back from the first intake? And I do remember, and you are right, I do owe you a round of applause, Rob.
Yeah. Thank you very much, James.
Thank you very much. Lovely stuff. 12:37, Michael's in Wembley. Question or answer, Michael?
It's a question.
Splendid.
Okay, hello, by the way.
Hello.
And I hope I can get a round of applause one day. I'm so dying for one.
Well, everyone needs a dream, Michael. We all need a dream.
And they come true. Question being... When I see the moon sometimes on certain nights, it looks very, very bright. Mm. My boy would say then to me, Dad, why is the moon so bright? I see it on TV and it's so dull and dark and grey-looking matter. That's basically the question. How come it's so bright from Earth, but when we're seeing on TV and so forth, it's just a dull grey-looking...
Do you mean the actual surface when you get there?
From what I've seen on TV,
it's dull and
grey.
Well, isn't it just to do with where the sun is? So they land on the dark side of the moon.
Yeah, but then if you land on the moon, on the bright side, I've never seen it, a picture of it, of any sort being so bright, as if there's a bulb inside it, so to speak, you know?
Yeah, I do. There's something there, isn't there? I just can't... I'm just hoping it's not really obvious and we're both missing it, Michael.
Me too. But I can't see what or why. I mean, I don't... I'd be thinking it would be magnified, the lightness.
So how come when you... Because the moon sometimes is glowing like you wouldn't believe. How come when you land on it, you don't get blinded by the light?
Why don't you need sunglasses when you're on it, yeah?
All right, well, if it is a stupid question, we're both in it together, mate, all right? I've got your back, Michael. It's 12:38. Can you answer that one? 0345-6060-973. Bob's in Waltham Cross. Bob, question or answer?
Question, please.
Yes.
I want to know why, at this time of year, when mushrooms and toadstools are beginning to start to sprout here and there and around the trees,
yes,
in the grass,
yes,
why do they grow in a crescent shape? Not the actual mushroom itself, but there's always a track in the grass that's sort of horseshoe-shaped, in which the mushrooms grow. Why don't they grow in straight lines or just randomly?
I thought they grew in circles. They grow in fairy circles.
Well, they sort of, in outside where I live, they tend to be like in a crescent shape.
Okay.
And I can't explain to myself why. I thought if it was the spores that were being blown around, there's no prevailing wind in any particular direction.
Well, they're usually circular, and you, I mean, the answer, I think you've probably got it already, is that if you've got one mushroom and then it releases its spores and they land it fairly evenly, you're going to be left usually with a circle, but for some reason in Waltham Cross with more of a horseshoe shape. Horseshoe shape.
Yeah. But it's not just in one area, it's in several areas, so question still stands, I think.
Yeah, well, I'll leave it on the board, but I think the answer will be distribution of spores.
Okay.
Well, you're on. We need a fungologist. Or just a fungi. It's 12:39. Josh is in Islington. Josh, question or answer?
Question.
Yes.
Right, what I want to know is, I'm going to question the other day, it is, and what it is why is our time in the womb not counted after we're born? So, I understand the whole concept of being born, but is it not included? So, why when we're born, are we not 9 months or 7 months and 1 day, and then continue our life from that way?
Why would we be?
I don't know, that's the question.
Is it a question, or is it just a sort of strange observation, Josh?
I don't know. But
you, you know what a birthday is.
Exactly, so...
Oh, no, I know why. No, I know why.
Obviously, we're still...
No, there's no way you can know when you were conceived.
Well, can you not?
No, of course you can't. I mean, maybe now they can do it scientifically, but bearing in mind that even if you go to France, the notion of it being a 36-week gestation period, I think in France it's 40 mm-hmm. weeks, and so the 9 months is quite a broad church. Do you have any kids of your own?
No.
If you do, then you'll be quite surprised at the length of period in which you can give birth, even though they give you a due date. I think my eldest was 2 weeks late, neighbours were 2 weeks earlier, and they were supposed to be born on the same day. So the idea of starting the clock at conception would have been historically impossible.
True. Okay, fair enough.
Thank you.
Thank you.
No, thank you. Round of applause for me. Jason's in Mill Hill. Jason, question or answer?
Answer, James.
Come on, then.
It's for the moon.
Can I tell you something secret?
Yeah. Without,
you promise not to tell anyone else?
Go on.
The note on the screen next to your name here says, he sounds really delighted with his answer. doesn't tell me, doesn't give me any clue what it is, it just says you're really delighted with it.
Yes, because I've never had a round of applause.
Well, hang on, don't count your chickens, Jason!
Okay, so, what you're looking at when you're looking at the TV screen is you're looking at a camera which has got a very highly protective lens on the front of it that takes down, obviously, the amount of light coming into the lens, otherwise you'd burn out the camera. And what it is a dichroic coating. I don't know if you've ever heard of a dichroic coating. It was developed by NASA.
Yeah.
It's like a metallic coating which goes onto glass, which reflects the radiation and the sunlight away. So it's like a very, very expensive pair of Ray-Bans, if you can imagine. And that's what they have on the front of their visors. You know, I don't know if you've ever seen an astronaut with his gold visor down.
Yeah.
That's the dichroic coating. That protects him from being...
Say that word again.
Dichroic.
You'd got your round of applause at that point, as you probably knew. Dichroic. Might even have just made that word up, but it's got you over the wire. What are your qualifications, Jason?
I am a glass blower in my spare time.
Oh, brilliant.
Full time. And we use dichroic glass for embellishment in decorative arts glass.
Right.
So I blow glass, which is smashed as part of a Jewish wedding ceremony, and then they return it to me, and I make it into really pretty stuff for them.
Oh, wow, what a lovely business. Have a round of applause.
Thank you.
There it is. Do you want to know something, Jason? I'm delighted with your answer as well.
Ah, oh, thank you.
We're both delighted with... We're all delighted with Jason's art. Chris is in Epsom. Chris, question or answer?
I think I've got an answer. Stepfather.
Go on.
Stepmother. I think it's because you step up into the role of a surrogate parent, as it were.
Well,
so you step into the position of a parent, or step up to being a parent.
What about a daughter, then? Stepson?
I'm gutted.
You hadn't thought that through, had you, Chris?
No. I'm overcome by fumes here. I'm painting a door, so...
I don't want your excuses, mate. Seriously. No, I can't do anything. There's no way you're getting anything for that. But it's the
not
sort
half
of,
a round of applause.
Not even half a round of applause. I'm getting told off for handing them out willy-nilly. If I gave you one, there'd be resignations, mate. Seriously, there'd be protests and boycotts. So good luck with the door. Use a mask. Robin's in Horsham. Question or answer, Robin?
It's an answer, James.
Splendid.
It's the mushroom.
Right, just stop right there, OK? He's gone now, but you can tell that Robin is going to get her... I can tell. Robin is... You, Robin, are feeling absolutely great about this, aren't you? You know you've got it. You've nailed it. I can tell from your voice. As soon as Chris came on and went, I think I've got an... I just had... My heart sank. It's all about PMA, positive mental attitude. Come on, Robin!
OK, the mushrooms that you're actually seeing aren't individuals. They're the fruiting body of one, and I'll use the word organism because it's fungi, aren't exactly plants.
Sure.
And they actually are growing underground with little things that are called mycelium. I might not quite get the pronunciation rightly. So they all grow from one spore and grow out evenly along the ground. And when it's time to fruit, of course, the fruit will be on the same sort of length. And there you go, you'll get a circular effect.
Bada bing, bada boom, bada bish. Round of applause for Robin.
Thank you very much.
Thank you very... Oh, hang on, what are your qualifications?
Donkey years ago, oh. I did a degree in biology.
Oh, you should have just said fungi. Shouldn't you?
Sorry?
You should have just said I'm a fungi, James.
Well, I'm a chef as well now, so I do use them every now and again.
Fair enough. Good work. 12:45.
Mystery Hour with James O'Brien on LBC.
12:48. Done very, very well today, but there are two that still need answers, and there are room for a couple more questions. Why do we call a funeral director an undertaker? And what is it about the word step in a stepdaughter or a stepfather? Why step? 03-45-60-60-973. If you can answer either of those, we'll get your own question squeezed on in the last 10 minutes of this week's Mystery Hour. Let's go to Hornchurch first. Tom is there. Tom, question or answer?
It's an answer, James.
Come on, Tom.
Right. Why do we call a funeral director an undertaker?
Yes.
Historically, there were no such things as professional undertakers or professional funeral directors.
Sure.
They were always members, sort of pillars of the community and what have you, who would conduct funerals for people.
Carpenters often. It was often a there's a place in Cornwall I drove past that still had the ancient sign up the cabinet makers, they made the coffins, they sort of branched out into doing the whole funeral service as well.
Yeah, I mean, carpenters, builders, and so on and so forth.
Okay.
So they would have other professions, but these people from other professions would undertake to take on the burial of that particular person, and that's where it comes. That's where it actually comes from.
Are you
that's
sure?
Where the phrase undertaker comes from. Yes.
Qualifications?
Absolutely. I was told by an undertaker. I used to be a professional organist in the crematorium for 10 years.
Blimey.
And I actually asked that question of him, and he said, "You know, that's where the history of it actually comes from."
Professional organist in a crematorium for 10 years.
Yes.
That's pretty powerful qualification for a question about undertakers. But all that I was sceptical about was that in a way that would apply to anything. So, you know, your decorator undertakes your decorating work. Your accountant undertakes your accounting work. I undertake to present a radio programme every day with my employers. That's my undertaking. It doesn't seem specific to undertaking, per se.
Well, that's what I was told by a professional undertaker, put it that way.
What about they're called the undertakers because it's their job to take you under?
I think that's a common misconception, actually.
Well, you would know. You worked in a crematorium.
Yeah.
They're still called undertakers. I think you're probably right, but I just want to get a bit more out of you before I give you a round of applause. What's the strangest thing you ever had to play on the organ in the crematorium?
Probably the strangest thing I've ever had to play on the organ in the crematorium was actually on LBC with Nick Ferrari's show, believe it or not, quite a few years ago, where I played Ding Dong Merrily on High as part of his Christmas.
I meant more at a funeral. I mean, I admit any involvement with Nick is strange, but at an actual service, what would be the?
At an actual service, I've had to play the theme tune to Only Fools and Horses.
Well, I like that on the organ. I bet that sounds great.
It does. Yes. Yeah, it did. Bit of tremolo and what have you on
God
there, but yeah, it did because he was because the chap was known as his very own Del Boy, basically. So they wanted to remember him like that.
Tom, you're like in. That. You're over the line, my friend.
Thank you.
Thank you. 12:52. Una is in Greenford. Question or answer, Una?
Hi, James. This question.
Great stuff.
It's been bugging me a bit. Do you ever get twin animals?
What, me?
Well, you. Have you ever had twin animals today?
Well, as in what? Because, I mean, cats have six or seven kittens. Some of them seem to...
Look, yeah. But, you know, obviously they have exquisite markings. Do you ever get two?
Identical animals?
Identical, yeah.
So it would be for a split egg in the womb,
yes,
wouldn't it?
Is that possible?
That's a nice question. I'm just surprised we've never done it before. It seems like a classic mystery hour question, that, but I don't remember ever.
Lovely. I feel quite honoured.
What prompts your interest? Why do you want to know?
Well, a couple of years ago I raised six ginger kittens and they were all spectacularly different. And aww. I just always wondered... Could any of them ever have been the same?
I've had cats all my life. I never remember encountering any kittens that were absolutely identical in the way that human twins are. It's a lovely question.
Yeah.
I mean, chickens would be tough because they all look the double yolked egg. It's not a split yolk. Well, why am I talking? I don't know the answer. I should just clear the line for someone who does, shouldn't I?
Yes.
Consider it done. Thank you, Una. Sue's at Heathrow. Sue, question or answer?
Hello. No, I'm back from Heathrow now.
Oh, I'm sorry.
I really think carried it through because of fungi. Come on.
Sorry.
It's a question anyway.
I let myself down. I mean, I let you down, I let the producer down, but most of all, I think I let myself down with that. Carry on.
Okay. I have a question which I asked about a year or 2 years ago that didn't get answered.
Oh, crikey.
And after I asked it, my daughter heard it and she told me off because it was her question when she phoned you, which is, why are some people hot and some people cold? Aside from the fact that someone might be unwell, therefore they're cold, or someone that maybe... rather ample and therefore be warmer, or someone who's very skinny who might be chilly. Because there's several members in our family. Me originally, I've always been a warm person, and my husband's got to live in an igloo, basically.
Yes.
And my daughter's very similar with her husband. She's very warm, and he feels the cold, and they're similarly built. And
is it the thyroid gland or something like that? I don't...
Well, would it be diagnosed? I mean, if you're not excessively hot, no, and if you're not excessively cold, but there are...
So two people sitting in the same room with similar build, one of them is warm and one of them is cold. How come?
Yes, and we used to think it was to do with the month in which you were born. I was born in February, so I could stand cold more than hot.
Maybe.
And my son-in-law... was born in August, so he can't stand the cold, you know.
No, it didn't make some sense. When I came home from boarding school, the house was always too hot for me. But that was sort of nurture rather than nature. It got because my boarding school was in the middle of North Yorkshire and it was big drafty halls everywhere. So you got used to being freezing. And I'd come home to Kidderminster, and my mum wasn't one for having the heating on all the time, but it was always too hot for me in the house when I first got home from school. So it might just. Oh, hang on, I think we've got it. Wait there, Judy's in Chingford. Judy, what have you got?
Hooray! Okay. Yes, it is the metabolism. You're right, it's really the thyroid. Because some people have different levels of metabolism, and the metabolism, in an essence, works to keep your inner organs warm. So someone with a really fast metabolism, their body clock is working really, really quickly, and because it's working quickly, it warms the internal organs, and then our bodies react by keeping us cool by having a sweat. So the water comes out of the skin, and that cools the body down again. People with a slower thyroid, slower metabolism, it won't work as fast. So the body, the internal organs stay warm, and therefore they don't need to be warmed up so much.
Qualifications, Judy?
I'm an obesity and diabetes specialist, and I look after people with metabolic issues.
Do you know, the way that the news agenda in this country is going at the moment, I sometimes feel like an obesity specialist. Sue, are you happy with that answer?
I'm happy, that's brilliant. Also,
what?
Would you give a round of applause?
You want a round of applause?
No, the lady.
No, I'm going to give it to Judy, yes. What do you think I am? Some sort of philistine? No, Judy, this is for you.
Thank you.
I love that. Sue got satisfaction after 2 years. 2 years she's been waiting for that. Unbelievable. What else have we got? Twin animals. And did we go, The Undertaker. So Step and Twin Animals. Where's Robert? Robert's in Taunton. Robert, question or answer?
It's an answer, and I answered it years ago.
Don't say that. If we can't... Do you not hear the question about short-term and long-term memory? It's not that easy, you know.
Yeah, I didn't get the... I didn't hear the answer about that. It was a good question, then.
Yes, it was. I've forgotten the answer.
Well, I suppose I have to look it up.
Carry on.
Step. It's a corruption of the old German, or high German, old English word for orphan.
Stuf.
Yep.
Is it for orphan or for bereaved?
Orphan.
Well, why stepfather, then?
Well, because the assumption is that the assumption was made then.
I think you're half right. I don't know if
I got a round of applause for this.
Yeah, but you can't trust me with any of that. It was probably Jones was...
You did most of them yourself.
Jones was trigger-fingering that day. I think that the word stufen means bereave or bereavement, so a child without a parent becomes a stepchild. And the step-parent is simply the step-parent of the step-child. So it means bereaved. There's been a bereavement rather than an actual orphaned.
The root of the word means orphan.
Stiefen. It means bereaved. But it might be the same word.
Well, I think that it's got the same root.
Yes. Well, I don't know if I give you a round of applause because you've already had one.
Well, all right, then.
Which means there's a round of applause going begging. How convenient.
A good show.
Oh, no, halve it with Robert. Joe's in Balham. There's no way I'm going to have time to answer your question, but I really want to hear it, Joe.
Okay. Hi, James.
Hello, Joe.
Hi, mate. Baby squirrels. I've never seen baby squirrel with father squirrel and mother squirrel together.
You've never seen a family of squirrels?
I've never seen that, no.
And you want to know why?
I want to know why.
Yeah. You're not looking hard enough. That's it from me for another day. We'll do it again tomorrow morning from 10 on LBC. I'm James O'Brien. The next voice you'll hear belongs to Julia Hartley-Brewer.